That's right.
We'll call the House Tax Committee to order. The hour of 5 p.m. having arrived, or 7:45, I guess is here. Okay, today, members, we do have a quorum. Senator Coonan moves the minutes. Excuse me. See, I look into the future. I'm a visionary, aren't I? Amazing. Representative Coonan moves the minutes of March 8, 2012. Any additions or corrections? Hearing none, all fair say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Coonan. Okay, Representative Garofalo will move House File 2083, be recommended, passed, and sent to the Committee on Ways and Means. Welcome to your committee, Chair Garofalo. If you could please present your bill. But before we do that, we have one person listed to testify. I believe it's Mr. Commissioner Showalter is on the list. So we will certainly, here we go. Good. Okay, so we will let the chair introduce his bill, and then I would like to see from the audience if there is anyone that wishes to testify on behalf of or with concerns about House File 2083. Chair Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. Regarding the tax provisions that are in House File 2083, there is a provision right now under current law because of a technicality. The Northfield School District is listed as a school district in the seven-county metropolitan area. That is not true, so we make a correction to that to check the designation of where their offices are, as every other school district is. That has a extremely modest levy reduction in the future. Second of all is a bill from Representative Fritz regarding lease space in the Faribault School District, which results, again, in a very modest levy increase. The property tax portions of this, the shiftable levies, are interact because we are reducing the shift from its current rate pursuant to the February forecast of 35.7 to a rate of 29.8. Those are the tax provisions, Mr. Chairman, and I'm happy to stand for questions or allow for the commissioner to give his testimony given the delay in the start of the hearing.
What would the committee members prefer? Would we like to go into the testimony of Commissioner Showalter first, or do you have questions for the chair right now? Representative Lincheski?
Mr. Chair, can Representative Garofalo tell us where in the summary in the bill those pieces were that you just referenced?
Representative Garofalo?
Let's see, Mr. Chairman. The section of the bill is going to be... Let's see. Section 5 of Article 1 is going to be the definition. Changes the qualifying date necessary to determine a school district's equity region from July 1st, 1999 to January 1st of 2012. That's the first section.
Okay.
The Fritz provision is going to be... Article 4, Section 5 is what the voice in my head says. It authorizes
levy,
the Faribault School...
That's right.
Representative Lincheski.
Yep. That's right.
Okay.
That's the last.
Okay, let's go to Commissioner Showalter. We're very fortunate tonight to have Commissioner Showalter with us. If you could... And again, members, we're looking at the tax provisions here. Welcome, committee, sir. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, for the record, my name is Jim Showalter, Commissioner of Minnesota Management and Budget.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. If I may, I would like to just address one element of this bill, which is using some of the budget reserves to pay down some of the school shifts. I addressed some of my concerns in the Education Committee and would like to reiterate those in front of the Tax Committee. I think the roles are different, and certainly I think the Tax Committee understands some of the basic risk factors that are created by this kind of financial move. And I want to make sure that you understand some of the implications of this kind of situation. The bill uses and sort of overrides a longstanding financial practice of the state in which we try to stabilize the state's finances before we start paying down the shifts. In the last two forecasts, we've been fortunate. We've received some good news. And as a result, we've been able to replenish the budget reserve, the cash flow reserve, and has started to pay down the aid payment shift that's made to schools. This bill sort of revisits that ordering and takes some of the money back out of the budget reserve in order to pay back additional portions of the aid payment shift. While it's true we're in better shape than we were just a year ago, it's hardly a place that Minnesota has wanted to have been, nor I think should want to return to in the future. We have had a longstanding responsibility to take care of the state's finances first so that we can provide some consistency and predictability for school districts. By using up the budget reserve, we no longer have some of that cushion for future forecast risk for uncertainty going forward. An additional element to this concern is really simply on a cash basis. By paying back the aid payment shift, we are not really helping our cash position. We're in fact exacerbating it somewhat. And so by doing this, we're likely to have to borrow more going into the future. These are some of the elements that I'd be happy to address with the committee. I would just go to a very basic sort of personal finance approach. You know, anytime you talk to, go to Susie Orman or anybody, you basically say, well, you don't start paying down your debt faster when you got just a couple bucks in your pocket. First, you want to make sure you've got your finances stabilized before you start to take on more aggressive repayment of past debt. That's essentially the situation we're at right now, with only basically 3% of our budget in reserves. We've got about, on average, what's necessary for the risk that's still in this biennium. I would recommend that the tax committee not draw money out of the budget reserve for this purpose at this time. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Commissioner. Questions for the Commissioner, Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Showalter, when we were at the budget briefing a while back when the new forecast came out, there you expressed some concerns about cash flow problems potentially in fiscal 13. Mm-hmm. And I think you're preparing for me and probably others for my request a cash flow chart that we hear will be coming fairly soon. But tell me if I'm correct. I think you indicated that in the spring of 13, like March, April, and May, somewhere in that period, that we would have some major cash flow problems and that it might generate whatever tools you have in the toolbox, like perhaps short-term borrowing, line of credit, and so on. So if you could expand on that, I think that would be a major concern that some of us would have.
Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, Representative, thank you for the question. Yes, we are in the final steps of finalizing updated cash flows based upon the February forecast. That gives you a day-by-day estimate of how much cash we estimate to have on hand. It's a treasure to have that kind of certainty or at least close understanding of the cash position for the state, because if you think about it, we have billions of dollars that go out of the state every month in spending and billions coming in revenues. And so on a daily basis, to have a guesstimate, good estimate that gets you within $10, $20, $50 million of where we're going to be is really important. As Representative Anderson suggested, we are anticipating low points in a couple times of the year, starting off in the fall and probably coming back again in the spring. And that's due to the cyclicality of our spending and our revenue numbers. Aid payment shifts from the past 3 years only exacerbate that. So we've got our local aid payments front-loaded in the fiscal year. We have our school payments front-loaded in the fiscal year. And we have the June accelerated sales tax coming in just the last week or so of the fiscal year as a revenue source. So if you consider that, you would expect that there's some times where we're very short. I would expect September, October to be very difficult months for the state, probably with negative balances. Usually March, April also is a timeline that's usually pretty tough. We were able to get by in fiscal 12. Our projections before and our projections going forward would have fiscal 13 being significantly worse than fiscal 12, when we did not have to borrow. If we are short of money, we will have to go to the markets. We will have to extend a line of credit and use it, or we'll have to go to the markets in Wall Street and draw down hundreds of millions of dollars and hold on to that for the rest of the fiscal year.
Representative Carlson.
Yeah, and just a follow-up now with what is in the current bill. The using of the reserves, I think you indicated at that same meeting that there would be a payment that goes out to the school districts with the current buy-down under current law of about $200 million sometime this spring, and how much would be going out under this bill, if you happen to know that, the increase, and would that trigger then a cash flow problem potentially this spring, in addition to the ones that we alluded to in 13?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Representative, the forecast indicated we would be drawing, we would be able to start repaying some of the shift. About $200 million of that will likely go and be paid in the March time frame, around March 15th. That will certainly bring down our cash balances from previous sort of estimates in the November time frame, but it is not going to require short-term borrowing. It's not going to bring us into a danger zone where we're particularly concerned. Going forward into fiscal year 13, that isn't the case. Going into fiscal year 13, not because of that first $300 million, but because we have a lot of payments, a lot of aid payment shifts, a lot of front-loaded requirements, and very little cash in reserves to really pay for those.
Thank you.
Carlson? That's it. Questions for the commissioner? Okay, thank you, commissioner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's how much budget to do.
Chair Garofalo.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Just to be clear, with the makeup payments that are going out, that was highlighted in the by Representative Carlson's comments. Keep in mind that the makeup payment that we're proposing to make here, in excess of $430 million, that those payments are already going out in July, August, September, and October. Those are not stretched out over a 12-month time frame. So at the end of October 30th, from the shiftable portion of what we're paying back, there is no impact on the cash flow account effective October 30th.
Any questions on the bill to Chair Garofalo? Representative Rucavina.
Chair, Representative Garofalo, did House leadership have a handshake with the governor on how any reserve, you know, any excess money, if it happened, was going to go in and flow into these accounts? And I mean, that's how we finished out these special sessions. So, I mean, there obviously was some type of a handshake, and now has that handshake been broken?
Chair Garofalo.
Mr. Speaker, Representative Rucavina, I assume you're referring to the end of the 2009 legislative session.
No, I'm referring to the end of the last session when we went into special session, which...
shutdown.
I wasn't there, but negotiations went on to end the state shutdown, and I'm assuming all of these agreements were reached with a handshake or some type of promise to get to stop the shutdown or to, you know, end the shutdown and get back to business. And now it seems that agreement was being paid. Being changed. I don't know. I wasn't there. I wasn't in the room, and neither was anybody on this side of the table. So I'm just asking the question. Maybe you were in there because school funding was an important part of the agreement that finally settled the shutdown. So is the agreement being that was reached at that time being changed with this bill?
Chair Garofalo.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Rucavina, I am not aware of any agreement to prohibit payback of the shift. I was not party to any of those conversations.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'm just saying...
Representative Rucavina, let me answer your question.
Not this particular... Not to do anything with the school shift. I'm just saying, was there an agreement by leadership in the governor's office that if money, extra money came in, it would flow into, you know, the budget reserve or this fund or that fund and stay there until we, you know, started working on our next budget in the next biennium?
Chair Garofalo, and I apologize I cut you off there. I'm sorry. Chair Garofalo.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Rukavina, outside of legislative action, there's already $318 million of payback to the school shifts to reduce the payment shift to 35.7. I'm aware of no agreement to change that. In addition, I'm aware of no agreement to wall off the over $1 billion in cash funds the state has right now. It is a higher priority for the majority caucus to reduce our liabilities and reduce our debt as opposed to having that cash on hand.
Representative Rukavina?
Well, Mr. Chair, I just say, you know, we're taking money out of one pocket and putting it in the other, and there's going to be debt that I would assume, you know, seeing what Mr. Showalter has said, that we may be short-term borrowing or have to as a state. And you're helping the school districts with their short-term borrowing. I agree with that. But is that short-term, is the borrowing then going to be on the state of Minnesota number? And again, Representative Garofalo, you know, I think there was an agreement with the governor's office and Republican leadership in the House and Senate that the monies would flow, yes, anything after the budget reserve was built up again, that any extra money would flow towards paying back the school borrowing, but this goes above and beyond that agreement, I think.
Mm-hmm. Chair Garofalo?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Rukavina, I'll reiterate, I am aware of no such agreement. I was privy to the negotiations. I was aware of the proposal to increase the shift to 50%, which was rejected, and a compromise was accepted at 40%, but it should surprise no member of this committee or no member of the public that on a bipartisan basis, we've been very aggressive in opposing the increase in the shift, and therefore we're going to pay it back as soon as we can.
Representative Rukavina?
Well, Mr. Chair, it's still going to take a long time to pay it back, and members, this state's been in a world of hurt since we cut income taxes for the wealthiest Minnesotans a decade ago, and I think we've had 8 deficits in the last decade because we have a structural imbalance, and this bill is doing nothing to improve that. It's doing a little bit to even make the structural imbalance a little more, a little more harder than it should be.
Thank you, Representative Rukavina. Representative Gottwald?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A question for Representative Garofalo. Representative Garofalo, when we wrapped up last regular session, we had the legislature had passed a balanced budget that did not include any additional education funding shift, correct?
Chair Garofalo.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Gottwald, yes.
Representative Gottwald.
Well, I'd like to ask Mr. Showalter, but I think I know what the answer would be. Where was the Dayton administration's deep concern for short-term borrowing from the taxpayers' pockets when they insisted on the additional spending that led to the unnecessary government shutdown, insisting on additional spending that ended up resulting in a education funding shift. $2.4 billion left to be paid, $2 billion of which came during DFL majorities. Mr. Chair, Representative Garofalo, I appreciate you bringing this forward because I think it does show our priority to pay off our debt and our balances, and not by growing government. I would argue, Representative Rukavina, the real reason that we've had the deficits that we've had is that we're growing spending in the state twice as fast as our economy. You can't keep up with it. You want to raise income taxes on, you name it, who's the wealthy? The small businesses of the state who create the jobs? It's a bit odd to hear us talking about cash flow concerns and concerns about short-term borrowing. We didn't seem to have any problem last session in proposing, an over 20% increase in state spending on the backs of Minnesota's taxpayers and job creators. And here we're just talking about paying back the shift that we ended up having to do. Now that the economy is finally beginning to edge back, we have a little bit of money to do it with. We still have a reserve, as Representative Garofalo has testified to. I think this is the right thing to do, and thank you for bringing it forward, Representative Garofalo.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, just really quick.
Chair Garofalo.
On the cash balance amounts, I just want to make sure that members understand that the payback of the shift is for payments in July. Those schools get trued up with those payments July through October. Mm-hmm. So for those who have concerns about the cash flow account, that portion of the shift going backward on October 30th, the cash balances, they have no difference. The timing of the payback of the payment in the spring of this year We can work with the administration on doing that in a smart way. But just to be clear, the payback portion, that $430 million, July through October, gets paid back anyways.
Representative Downey?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And just to Representative Rukavina's point that if we would increase revenues, we wouldn't have this kind of a problem. But I would just draw members' attention back to the governor's original budget proposal that had an over $3 billion tax increase. And at the end of his budget proposal for this biennium, we would have had zero in budget reserve and $171 million in cash reserve. And so actually, even with Representative Garofalo's proposal here, we'll have over three times as much cash in the bank, if you will, at the end of this biennium as the governor was originally proposing to have at the end of the biennium, even with the $3 billion tax increase. So I don't think this is an irresponsible move. I think it's an appropriate set of priorities. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Loeffler. Thank you, Representative Downey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and maybe I should have asked this when Commissioner Showalter was in front of us, but you know, the discussion a lot has talked about the short-term borrowing and implications of that, but I'm also concerned about long-term borrowing implications because we have already jeopardized our standing with the credit ratings, for better or for worse, and who is to blame in terms of going right down to zero. And, you know, my understanding of them is that they really want to see a long-term fiscal plan, a commitment to stability, a commitment to, you know, having the kind of financial management that gives them confidence when we're going to sell bonds for, you know, bonding proposals for a variety of different issues. And, you know, I'd like to know a little bit more about the potential implications as we meet with the bond raters of taking down our reserves when we finally just starting to put a little bit more back into that piggy bank. Because when I used to work on local bond sales, that was a big issue with them, but I've not done it recently.
Commissioner, welcome back.
Mr. Chair, thank you, Representative. The question about how this is viewed by the rating agencies is a great one, because even when Moody's stabilized our outlook at one step below AAA, at AA1, they said one of the challenges that the state had was reserve levels and our sort of diminished ability to have enough reserves to handle the risks going forward. When you look at the kind of metrics that Moody's and the other rating agencies have for how to stack Minnesota against other states, short-term debt and using other debt for operating purposes are a couple of the things that they look at. Certainly, a AAA state, a well-financed and fiscally managed state, should not have those issues. We should have enough reserves so that we don't have those issues coming up.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and yeah, this is maybe an unfair question, but if you have any sense of sort of the interest rate implications of, you know, us being able to get back up to that AAA versus, you know, the AAA minus that we're at right now. That might not be a fair question, but if you have a sense of that, that would be useful.
Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I don't have any kind of spreads between those two rates. I think what is important to remember is that the school districts also use the state's credit rating for their own borrowing. You know, currently there's about $13 billion of enhanced debt held by the schools. The state has a credit enhancement program that supports schools' own borrowing. So there's about $13 billion of that, and it really relies on the state's ability to have the best ratings available.
Representative Loeffler.
Thank you. That's something I wasn't aware of, and that's significant. Were they also relying on the state commissioner for the short-term borrowing as well, using our credit rating for that?
Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I believe so.
Representative Loeffler.
Is it?
Thank you.
Go ahead.
Representative Loon. Excuse me, Representative Loeffler.
No, I just wanted to say I think that we really need to, I mean, this is really about fiscal management. It's not just about the end of session. It's about, you know, what are we setting up for the future? And I think we ought to weigh both the short-term and the long-term implications here.
Thank you, Representative Loeffler. Representative Loon.
Mr. Chair, I just want to request a roll call.
Okay, roll call has been requested. Representative Rukavina.
Well, Mr. Chair, you know, Representative Garofalo, I don't really have a problem with your bill in paying back our school districts. You know, But, you know, kind of reminds me like when you're spending here like a range kid on a spring break, you know. So,
oh, yeah.
You know, and forgetting about you might have a few little bills to pay back when you get back to the college. But that's okay. But, you know, I do want to address Representative Gawalt and my good friend from Edina, because I've been on this tax committee longer than anybody here. And I can remember what happened a decade ago. You know, Mr. Michaels, you correct me if I'm talking out of school here because I'm just going by memory, but you cut income tax $800 million a year, and then you put the transportation levy takeover for another $200 million, and that's $1 billion of shifting money around and cuts, and then you take over Edina and Egan and other people's school district taxes that never got money under the Minnesota Miracle, and that's $1 billion a year, and you're talking about a $4 billion dilemma that never got paid for. Never got paid for. Oh, the economy is going to grow. And then other few little things like the chamber saying, oh, we can take the sales tax on, you know, on cars, and that's okay. And I'm proud to say that that went down in my district bigger than any other district in the state because we knew we were just robbing Peter to pay Paul. You know, and maybe taking sales tax from cars that used to be in the general fund paying for schools and nursing homes made sense to some people. To me, it made about as much sense as taking the sales tax on chainsaws and putting in the DNR budget. But, you know, that's a whole other issue. But, you know, Representative Gawalt and others on the committee, I just want to say this. To talk about picking the taxpayers' pockets with the homestead credit, which costs four... And helped me, Representative Lucheski, about $560 million.
$538.
All you did was pick the pockets. In my county, 68 people in St. Louis County would have paid on Governor Dayton's tax the wealthiest people in the state plan. And instead, Representative Gawalt, you guys picked the pocket of 200,000 property owners in St. Louis County.
Mr. Chairman.
So that's what you did. And I know I'm back getting off on a tangent, but... Don't talk to me about fiscal mismanagement on this committee because I've been around longer and I've seen the mismanagement. We are in a terrible, terrible bind, as Representative Carlson pointed out. We still got to look at a $2 billion deficit in the next biennium. We're not addressing at all with this bill. So, you know, I just don't want to hear about picking taxpayers' pockets when you went after all the property taxpayers in this state instead of the 68 people in my county that would have paid.
Mr. Chairman, just getting back on the topic of the bill, I just want to make clear to my friend that just like when the shift was increased, it generates one-time savings, paying back the shift is a one-time cost. So in terms of the structural balance issues you're referring to, this bill does not pertain to that.
Chair, thank you for pointing that out, and I agree with you. I'm just talking about the structural imbalance we've had for a decade that we haven't addressed around here, and both sides of the aisle have it.
Thank you, Representative Rukavina. Representative Lincheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I, you know, Representative Groffel, I did hear you say, you know, getting back on the bill. I mean, I think Representative Rukavina was on the bill. In fact, his discussion about the homestead credit, as I stated to you in a different hearing, you know, we have never cut the school's homestead credit in the history of this state, ever, not a penny. And it's been eliminated. And that would have been a great thing to have in a K-12 finance bill, is to return the schools the market value homestead credit that they lost. But that's not in this bill, and that is relevant to this committee, Mr. Chair. We're the tax committee looking at tax provisions within the K-12 bill. But Representative Garofalo, you know, Representative Downey and Representative Rukavina just had the, you know, the income tax or the tax increase discussion, And unlike a lot of folks here, bipartisanly, I don't have a big issue on the shift because I think it allows legislators in both sides of the aisle, and everybody's done it, to either not cut or not raise taxes. That's why both parties do it. You know, one side doesn't have to raise a tax, and one side doesn't have to cut something. But so we've had the tax discussion. Representative Garofalo, why not just cut another $430 million in one-time money out of the state budget to meet your goals?
Chair Garofalo.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Lincheski, that's because that would be precedent setting. We've never done that before, and we're not going to do it now.
Representative Lincheski.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I respect you have not done that. It has been done to cut one-time money, but you're making a different choice, and that's fine. I guess another question I just have if I'm understanding what you're doing, you know, we've got this law that says first we do cash flow, then budget reserve, then school shift, property tax recognition, you know, on down the line. And you're sort of reordering that. And so the way I understand it, in my mind, the cash flow and the budget reserve kind of both work like a cash flow account, but they've got different names and different dollars amounts. And over time, you know, people have debated whether those numbers should be raised or lowered or, you know, some other mechanism, but that's neither here nor there. I guess, so you're in this bill saying, I'm going to reorder that and I'm going to use two-thirds of the budget reserve. Why not just use it all?
Chair Groffalo.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Lencheski, I believe that it's important to leave things better than when we found them. And when I took over as chair of this committee, this meets the promise of making sure that we have a higher rate of payments going to school districts when I took over the committee. In addition, we want to do it in a fiscally prudent fashion. The budget agreement at the end of the 2010 session had a cash balances of $275 million. This bill would have them be at approximately $577 million. I think the increase in cash balances that the state will have is good news for the state. I believe that reducing the amount of debt that we put under school districts is good news. So essentially, those are the fiscally prudent things to do.
Well, Mr. Chair, then if I may, and so you want to get it back to where it was when you became chair, but the shift that existed that Governor Plenty and people like me did together, you don't want to address that because you didn't do that?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Lencheski, actually, we do make a bit of a down payment on the shift that you did.
Okay, and thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know, I think that's a fine reason. I mean, I just, as one who's okay with a shift, if I were not okay with a shift, I'd be trying to pay for it all, not just sort of playing this party brought it this far and that party brought it that far. I'd just get rid of the shift. But that's a good reason for that works for you. It wouldn't work for me, but I just trying to understand it. And so, If what we're hearing now is the cash flow or the concept of having a reserve is not really as high a priority as paying back a shift, will there be, Mr. Chair, and I guess to you, will your committee attempt to either to both pay back the revenue stream we lost when the tobacco bonds, that appropriation, that gimmick, that shift was enacted a few months ago? Is there going to be some effort to get rid of that, buying that revenue stream back? And then additionally, is there going to be an attempt to use budget reserve money to bring back the homestead credit?
No.
So Mr. Chair, we should not expect, I thought I heard the speaker say, actually on the radio this morning, something different. So good to hear that. So you're not going to do any property tax relief.
You said something different. I may be saying something different, but I'm not aware of any movement in that area at this time.
Okay.
And Mr. Chairman and Representative Groffalo, just to talk about, you know, the shift candidly, and I think you were honest about that this is something that both parties have done in the past. The difference is this year the shift, in last year at the end of session, was highly politicized. And so this member, I promise you, is never going to increase the shift again. That tool has been taken out of the toolbox because of the because some individuals decide to politicize it and some outsized groups are trying to overstate the impact of it. You are absolutely correct about its fiscal impact on school districts, but that tool is out of the toolbox and we ain't going back to it.
Just in closing, Mr. Chair, thank you. And thank you, Representative Garofalo. Just a thought, and I know you're not the Ways and Means Chair and she's not here, but it is her job to deal with this cash flow issue for the state and your majority's job to deal with the cash flow issue for the state. And I can only talk about what we could get done with Governor Plenty. You know, you'd get something done differently with Governor Dayton. I mean, I get it. These are compromises. But what we got done with Governor Plenty is Representative Carlson and I carried a piece of legislation to dramatically allow Governor Plenty to not go into deficit on a day-to-day cash flow basis. And we carried a lot of provisions that we didn't like delaying refunds on the corporate tax, the school's abilities that we could turn, you know, and let them do some debt. That's been eliminated in your new majority. I think you passed that last year, that option is off the table now.
Well, Representative, Mr. Chairman, Representative Lencheski, that provision actually dated back to the early 80s, so I don't, just to be clear.
Yeah, and I understand that. That was an old one, but we kept it because we realized it when Governor Plenty had his position on revenue. we needed to get through the day to day so people got their, you know, got their paychecks and stuff. So we needed all the tools, and we didn't shrink them. We grew them because the governor asked us to. And I think we could have said, no, we're not going to do this. We're going to watch the state collapse, but we didn't. And what I'm saying to you is this is going to exacerbate that problem when you start taking away the tools. And again, it's Representative Holberg's call. I mean, she's going to have to figure out how that's going to get managed, and I'm certain you're working with her, so I'm certain it's not you acting as an individual or the tax chair. I'm sure the speaker has got a whole plan here, but I think that's why we're hearing Commissioner Showalter now, is because we're going to limit the flexibility here. And again, this is just coming from someone who thinks I trump the reserve over the shift, because I can live with the shift, but I respect that you and I just disagree on that, so appreciate it.
Chair Groffel.
No, thank you, Representative.
Representative Gottwald, then Marquardt, then, okay, Representative Marquardt.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members. And I think we've got to step back and realize what we're doing. I'm just referring to the using the reserves for the shift. You know, the car went into the ditch, and we had a $5 billion deficit. And even before the November and February forecast, the cash flow accounts and reserve were down to like $122 million. And so now we've been pushing this car up out of the ditch, getting it back on the road, and I see this proposal now of bringing that car right back into the muck. And I think if we really look at this, this is extremely risky, it's reckless, it's irresponsible, and, you know, when you look at the February forecast, and if you know, just looking at the executive summary on page number 6, they talk about that this year is unlike a lot of years where they're looking at projections and they're looking at potential changes. On page 6, they talk about this is a year that there's a lot of uncertainty. There's just a lot of unpredictability. And to me, what we're doing here is taking a situation that is not even good yet, but getting better, and really putting it back into jeopardy. And we're going to end up banking on a lot of things. I mean, your proposal, which takes $430 million out of the reserves, is a huge gamble. Because what you're gambling on is that, first of all, one of the assumptions that Global Insight makes is that Congress is going to come to a grand bargain, as they call it. And that grand bargain is where the tax increases will not be as great as current law would have it be once the Bush-Obama tax cuts expire, and that the cuts in spending would not be as great as current law would state. That, you know, those trigger in, I think it's $1 billion or $1 trillion, whatever it is. But what this assumes is that Congress will reach this grand bargain. And they say if they don't reach the grand bargain, then GDP would go down about 2.5%. So we are banking on, listen to this, members, we are banking on Congress to get something done. That's what we're banking on here. Otherwise, you're going to look at would reduce the forecast for real GDP growth in 2013 by 2.5%. So you're counting on that. Another thing Global Insight talks about is they believe about 55% is that the economy will stay the same. But there's a 25% chance, which is down a little bit from the November forecast, but there's a 25% chance that in 2012 we could see a recession, and a 20% chance it will go higher. So again, we're banking on Congress to get the job done. We're banking on the economy to continue chugging along with nothing interrupting it. We're banking that there isn't any further disasters that would take money out of it. And so, you know, when you also look at it, and I think Commissioner Showalter alluded to this a little bit, is that for the structural balance in 2012, this year is about $111 million to the good. But next year, it goes down into the deficit for 2013 by $83 million. And in 2014, that structural deficit is down to $845 million. And in 15, down to $258 million. Down. So we're going this way. So, you know, right now what we're doing is literally just wishing this budget on a wing and a prayer and hoping everything comes out just fine. And I don't know of any homeowner that, when they just dug themselves out of a hole, would immediately go back to purchasing something when they really don't have much of a budget reserve. I just don't see that as something we'd want to do. So, you know, I think most of us, if we really look at this thing, would say, let's put the building blocks on the foundation. Let's make them as sure as we can before we start taking away from that budget reserve. And, I mean, I hate to say it, but this proposal, with, as I feel, as risky and irresponsible as it is, would make members of our U.S. Congress proud. That isn't something, I mean, this is something we've been criticizing them for doing. And also mentioned, you've got Standard & Poor's and Fitch both downgraded our ratings this summer, and Moody did about 8-9 years ago. And why? Because we were taking short-term solutions to long-term problems and rating reserves. And so, you know, I think everyone wants to try to pay back those school shifts. We have law in place to do it responsibly. And I really think this is going to create a lot of risk and damage a lot of the real positive things we've done in the direction we've moved as far as our budget's concerned.
Mr. Chairman and Chairman, Representative Marquardt, with the state having over $1 billion cash on hand between the cash between the budget reserve and the cash flow accounts, I believe that a more prudent use of those dollars is to pay down the debt that to pay down what are listed as liabilities on our state's accounting sheets. And you mentioned the downgrading of our bonds, and you are correct that the criticism they had is that we that previous legislatures rated those reserves to pay on a one-time basis for continued spending. Representative Marquardt, that's not what we're doing. We are using one-time funds for a one-time expense. And so there's a radically different position and strategies between what previous legislatures did, which was use one-time fixes for ongoing spending, versus a one-time transfer for a one-time cost.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Marquardt,
just one more comment kind of to put this into perspective. After the $430 million is taken away, it will leave about $580 million in cash flow account and reserves, I think, if my math is right. If you put that to someone who was making $50,000 in expenses, a family a year, that'd be about 1.7%, or maybe I'm using $40,000. It would be like having a reserve for this family, if they're spending $40,000, $50,000, of $850. So anything that might come up, your car might break down, for goodness sakes, or you might, you know, have to go and ask. It's only about 1.7% in comparison to our budget, that 577. So if you were to put that to a home of $40,000, $50,000, you're talking about less than $1,000 for meeting any types of emergency or cash flow or anything that might come up. I just, members, I think this is very risky and irresponsible.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Marquardt, I think what you're doing is you're using the biennial budget and you're comparing it to an annual salary, and those are not accurate. Those are not accurate parallels.
Oh, Mr. Chair, what I'm doing is taking the $577 million and going against the biennial budget of $34 billion. It's about 1.7%. I mean, the percentage comes out pretty.
We both made our points, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Anderson. Okay. And Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, I was just going to comment when we talk about the budget reserve and percentages. Years ago, when I chaired the Education Division of Appropriations, I served on a special commission with the then state auditor and others. President of the University of Minnesota, I think, was on it. And state auditor at the time was Governor Arne Carlson, and the recommendation that came out of there was that we should maintain budget reserves for governmental entities, whether it was the University of Minnesota or other entities, of about 5%. We're currently going to be at about 3%. As was just pointed out, you're dropping it down to what it, you calculate 1.7%, way below what any number of people recommended was an adequate reserve. We've unfortunately never, probably since that point in time, hit the 5% level, but we're at least currently at 3. So if we were doing good budgeting, we should never go below 3, and we should probably have a long-term goal of getting it up to 5.
Any questions?
That's just a comment that I wanted to make in terms of what an adequate reserve truly should be.
Thank you, Representative Carlson. Any other questions? Anyone else wish to testify? The committee legislative assistant will call
Mr.
the roll.
Chair, we have amendments.
Yes. Okay, amendments. I don't have any amendments here.
I think they're coming forward.
Okay, if a page could.
Why don't you have the page distributed? Mr. Chairman, I.
Representative Carl?
Have an amendment. Do you want me to move it now before.
Yes, go ahead and move it and describe it, and we'll get them passed out. We won't vote on until everybody has it, though.
Okay, well, I can wait a moment.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move amendment H2083A12. And there was a problem in terms of calculations when we were dealing with payment to the school districts. And what I'm proposing in this amendment is that this be changed from the nearest tenth, if you look on lines 15 and 16, to the nearest 100th. And that would correct what had been a calculation error.
To the amendment, to Chair Garofalo, and then
Mr. Chair Garofalo,
do you have a comment to the of Representative Carlson? If not, we'll go to Representative Davin.
Sure. I just want to make sure that the Representative Carlson, you're talking about is it $4.3 million?
That's correct. It was roughly $4 million.
Yeah.
Chair Garofalo.
So, Mr. Chairman, I'm trying to think. Currently, that money is allocated in the. This is the difficulty in being presented with an amendment without having the chance to review it, Representative Carlson. So,
Mr. Chair,
I'm going to have to think about this for a second.
Mr. Chair,
Dabney, comments to the amendment, Representative Dabney.
Well, Chair Garofalo is considering the A12 amendment. I'd like to move the A15 amendment to be before the committee.
As an amendment
to the A12 amendment.
Okay, where's the A15 amendment?
I'm sorry. If pages could please assist, I want to make sure that everyone has it.
Dabney, you want to propose to move the A15 amendment to amend the A12 amendment?
That's correct.
That's correct. Okay, let's get that out here. Why don't you describe your amendment, Representative?
Certainly.
While we're waiting.
I'd like to move to that because it goes with the flow of the conversation we've had this evening about the prudency and responsibility of the bill underlying. And what I see, and I think Commissioner Showalter accurately described, is the risky maneuver here of raiding the budget reserves in order to pay back the school shift. I don't like the school shift. I know there's a couple of charter schools that have been forced into closure because of the school shift and the impact, the disproportionate impact that it has on startup charter schools. Wanted to make sure that folks were aware of that. But I also don't like destabilizing the state budget. As some of you know, in real life, I'm a personal finance educator. I work with a wide variety of groups, from anything from homeless shelters to corporate lunch and learn situations to church basements. Spend a lot of time in church basements, actually. And when I talk to folks about prudent responsible budgeting, I talk about the importance of an emergency savings account. And 1.7% of your expenses is simply not a serious emergency savings account. And as Minnesotans, in order to be economically stable, in order to achieve their financial goals, need a deeper reserve than that, so does the state of Minnesota. I don't know where the state economy is going. Certainly things seem to be turning in a positive direction, but I think it was Representative Marquardt accurately laid out that there are significant risks before us, and I think we need to act prudently. The A15 amendment protects the budget reserves. It ensures that the considerate policy positions that we have taken bipartisanly in the past to fill the cash flow, fill the budget reserves, and then look at the school shift is respected, but it moves on the school shift by closing some tax loopholes that corporations have used to park revenue overseas and to hide it from paying their appropriate share of taxes here in Minnesota, as well as elsewhere in the country. So we want to be able to close those loopholes where they are recharacterizing and artificially shifting income to foreign countries. That's not fair to Minnesota. If you make your money here, you should pay your taxes on it here and not mischaracterize it and shift it. If you are trying to hide money by through a unitary business structure that doesn't have a nexus here, but you're working here, you should be paying taxes here. And then actually, because I do like to work bipartisanly, Mr. Chair, picking up a Pawlenty administration proposal about not allowing the deduction of REIT dividends, as has been debated in this committee in the past. And with that, Mr. Chair, I'd like to ask for a roll call on the A15 amendment.
Okay, a roll call has been requested. Any discussion on the A15 amendment to the amendment of A12? Representative Gottwald.
Mr. Chairman.
We'll go to Representative Groffel first, and then we'll go to Representative Gottwald. Representative Groffel.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, Representative Dabney, I see on page 2, I see the term a tax haven. Would this apply to trust funds in South Dakota as well?
Representative Dabney.
Mr. Chair, you know, my kids like to collect the state quarters. And we're excited because now they've moved on to the National Park Quarters. I don't remember from their collection what year South Dakota became a State of the Union. There certainly may well be somebody here in this room who knows that. But they're not a foreign tax haven because they're part of the United States and have been for, I believe, quite a while.
Mr. Chairman.
Chair Groffel.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Dabney, I'm just noting on 2.20, it says incorporated as a tax haven, didn't say a foreign tax haven. Mm-hmm. Do you know if trust funds in South Dakota put there by millionaire families would still be protected under current law, or is this just that?
Perhaps Mr. Chair, Mr. Michael could explain the implications of anyone having particularly older trust funds set up in, I don't know, pre-World War II in other states. When you take income from that fund, is it taxable as income here in Minnesota? Mr. Michael, could you help us with this, please?
Mr. Chair, Representative Dabney, if the distributions are made from the trust to a beneficiary that is a resident of the state, they would be taxable in the state. So even though the trust is not a resident of the state and would not pay tax on its income when it makes distributions to the beneficiaries that are residents, tax would be paid.
So, Mr. Chair, Representative Garofalo, it sounds like the appropriate taxes are being paid on those distributions. It's these foreign tax havens where corporations are mischaracterizing their revenues, are hiding their revenues, and are creating situations where other Minnesotans are either paying higher taxes or receiving lower government services.
Chair Garofalo.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman and Representative Dabney, I guess we have a different definition of appropriate. We probably want to maybe in a future hearing revisit why people would put trust funds in South Dakota as opposed to Minnesota. I'm sure there's a multiple reasons for that. But Mr. Chairman and members, I would oppose this amendment. Clearly the strategy of growing revenue and growing jobs is working in the state of Minnesota, and the strategy of confiscating additional revenue is one that has failed in the past, and I would urge a no vote on the amendment.
Okay, before we go to questions, I'd like Ms. Templin from House Fiscal to just describe what the numbers are on this amendment to the amendment, or the fiscal amendment. Ms. Templin, please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
House Fiscal Staff, Cynthia Templin. Mr. Chair, I just got a copy of the amendment, and we can walk through the amendment together. Page one, that is the FOC repeal. Page two, subdivision five is the tax haven repeal. Going back to the FOC repeal, that has a revenue gain of $108.1 million. On subdivision five, the tax havens, that has a revenue impact of $17.8 million. Page, oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. To summarize this, rather than going page by page, the revenues that are affected in the A15 amendment, again, it would be a revenue gain of $194.2 million in fiscal 13. Just to summarize very briefly, there would be an FOC repeal, a repeal of the foreign royalty subtraction. It would impose the unitary business sales attributable to Minnesota. There's tax havens, foreign partnership conformity, and the elimination of dividend received deductions, real estate investment trust, also known as AKA REITs. If you'd like further detail, I can go into the tails, Mr. Chair. Just let me know how much more detail you'd like to go into.
Members have any questions? Okay, Representative Gottwald, Downey, and Anderson. Representative Gottwald.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Dabney, I appreciate your comments on foreign operating corporations and the foreign royalties and all these. And it's nice to talk about how, you know, they hide it and they sneak it away and they're doing terrible things to the state of Minnesota. But I got to wonder, if you've done your homework on this little political piece here, $194.2 million in fiscal 2013, how many jobs, and I wonder, is Medtronic here? Is Boston Scientific here in the audience? And I suspect they're not, but I wonder if they had this in front of them, whether they could tell us how many jobs we would lose as a result of this bill and what that would cost the state of Minnesota in terms of revenue. You know, we talk about jobs, and then you bring something like this that affects some of the state's largest job creators. And we're doing this all for $194.2 million in a year. And this is the point. We keep bringing up these nice political statements that don't drive a heck of a lot of revenue, but they make nice little points and cost us jobs and cost us investment and end up, in the end, costing us much more than $194.2 million. So, again, it makes a nice political point, but it kills jobs, it kills revenue, it kills money for the state of Minnesota. And as I think Representative Marquardt just pointed out, our economy is coming back. It is in a good shape in the sense that we're building back. Jobs are coming back. Businesses are beginning to invest again. They're looking for some stability. And then you're going to hit some of our state's largest, most forward-thinking employers with this kind of thing. Members, I hope you'll vote no on this.
Representative Downey?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Maybe just a question for staff. I know the governor had a few of these things in his jobs bill proposal today. If this were to actually go on and be passed and then a subsequent bill were to be passed using these in a different way, would the subsequent bill prevail in the use of these funds and the distribution and override the payback of the shift?
The governor signed
Mr.
it.
Mr. Michael?
The governor has to sign it.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Downey, I really haven't looked at the governor's bill, and one would have to analyze if both passed and they're inconsistent. You know, the general rule is if they both are enacted into the law, the later one controls to the extent that it's inconsistent. But you'd have to analyze the language of the two bills to determine whether they're inconsistent or not.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I think the broader point I'm trying to make is while this may look good from Representative Dabney's perspective as a way to actually do some additional paying down of the shift, the reality is that once this revenue is in the state coffers, there is absolutely no guarantee that this money is going to go into the shift. There is one subdivision on page 21 that talks about how this will go to the repayment of the shift. But in a subsequent year, we could do anything we want. Any legislature could do what they want with this bill. So to look at this as anything other than the typical veiled tax increase, I think, is to see it for something other than what it really is. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Anderson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And just a little bit to expound on that, I'm hearing rumblings of people that aren't speaking just yet that the governor wouldn't sign this, and it sounds like there hasn't been any. I don't know if Representative Dabney has had a conversation with the governor's office, but from the rumblings that I'm hearing from the mics from over there, it sounds like he wouldn't sign this into law, especially given the proposal that he offered today to use these funds for something else. So I'm just wondering what's the point of him offering this if this is not something the governor is going to sign.
Further discussion to the A-15 amendment to the A-12 amendment.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Dabney.
If I may, it really gets down to choices. Do we protect tax havens for wealthy corporations? Or do we pay back? Or do we take on the responsibility to be the adults in the room and take responsibility for the funding of our schools? Last year, the majority engineered a dark and locked state capitol so they could lock the people of Minnesota out of the process so that they could push the state budget onto the backs of the kids in Minnesota. They did that by expanding the shift. Governor Pawlenty demanded it. Then the GOP majority demanded an expanded school funding shift, and by selling tobacco bonds. The first time in 153 years of statehood, I don't need a quarter to tell me that the state of Minnesota has done deficit spending. And who's going to pay for that? For 20 years, the kids who can't vote today are going to pay for that. And now the proposal before us, I'll give you credit, Chair Garofalo, at least you're doing this in public. You're doing it at almost 9 o'clock at night, but at least you're doing this in public, is to raid the piggy bank, further destabilizing state finances. In an uncertain economy, you're making choices to further destabilize the state budget that's already looking at a deficit in the next biennium and risk increasing that. Why? Because we're unwilling to ask the adults in the room to act like the adults. Far better to load the state budget onto the backs of today's students. I haven't gotten a projection on the impact on jobs on this, but I believe for Medtronic, it's 2 in Barbados and 3 in Liechtenstein. And I don't think that's my priority. My priority is a strong K-12 system. Because, you know, when Minnesota used to lead the nation in education, we had the strongest economy we've ever had. And this state, because of the wise decisions of our forebears in this room and across the state, moved from a below-average income state to above-average income state. We moved from a state with few Fortune 500 companies to a significantly disproportionate number of Fortune 500 companies headquartered here because of the strong workforce. And the majority's unwillingness to take prudent, responsible action has undermined the job-making situation in this state. This positions us for growth in our economy and strengthens our K-12 system in a responsible way that asks the adults to act like the adults. It's about choices, and I'm going to choose Minnesota's future and strong K-12 system and Minnesota's kids, and I would urge all of you as well. Mr. Chair, I believe I did ask for a roll call.
Yes, sir, you did.
Thank you.
The committee legislative assistant will take the roll on the A-15 amendment to the A-12 amendment.
Chair Davids?
No.
Representative Loon?
No.
Representative Lincheski? No. Representative Lincheski?
Yes.
Representative Anderson?
No.
Representative Bills?
No.
Representative Biskins?
No.
Representative Carlson?
Yes.
Representative Crawford?
No.
Representative Dabney?
Yes.
Representative Depke?
No.
Representative Downey?
No.
Representative Drazkowski?
No.
Representative Erickson?
No.
Representative Garofalo?
No.
Representative Gottwalt?
No.
Representative Hortman?
Aye.
Representative Kiffmeyer?
No.
Representative Knuth?
Yes.
Representative Coonan?
Yes.
Representative Lesh?
Aye.
Representative Loeffler?
Yes.
Representative Mack?
No.
Representative Marquardt?
Yes.
Representative Myra?
No.
Representative Paymar?
Yes.
Representative Rukavina?
Yes.
Representative Runbeck?
No.
Representative Tilbury?
Yes.
Representative Wardlow?
No.
There being 17 no's and 12 ayes, the motion does not prevail. We now have the 812 amendment. Representative Lencheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move the 813 as an amendment to the 812.
Okay, if that could get passed out. Could you please describe it as it's being passed out?
Sure. And Mr. Chair, maybe as it's being passed out, I just say to Representative Anderson, maybe she overheard Representative Marquardt and I. The discussion wasn't about the governor signing the bill. I think it's an answer to Representative Downey's question, what happens when something passes twice? The test isn't if it passes, it's if it's signed. So the legislature can pass all the bills in the world and pass the same things, but unless they're signed, they're not, you know. Right. So, I mean, that's... So that's what the discussion was as it relates to the governor. On the A13, if people have it, Mr. Chair, as I already mentioned, I feel a little differently about the shift, and this is the K-12 bill before the tax committee, and so I have a tax amendment I'd like to do, which is to use the same revenue that Representative Dabney just did. Instead, I'd like to take that money and increase the per pupil funding for all students in Minnesota, $168 per pupil, and ask for a roll call.
Roll call being requested. Chair Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Representative Lencheski. For the reasons I stated earlier, I would oppose this amendment. The strategy of growing revenue and growing jobs is more successful than confiscating additional tax revenue from businesses.
Any additional discussion? Anyone in the audience who would like to testify on behalf of or with concerns on the A13 amendment to the A12 amendment? Representative Lencheski.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know, members, I just want to be clear you understand what this is. This is a per pupil formula increase, $168 per student versus the provisions that Representative Dabney just walked through. You know, there's been some discussion trying to understand that, and so a little bit more about those provisions. The preferences that are in the amendment are used by relatively few taxpayers, less than 1% of the 35,000 corporations that file unitary tax returns in Minnesota. 170 of them claim the FOC deduction, and 108 of them account for 98% of the preference. And I could go on into all the provisions. And we will certainly hear from folks who don't want to lose their tax preferences, that they wish we would vote against losing their tax preferences. But these tax preferences, you know, members, you need to know that very few states have these tax preferences, and none of them have the identical package that Minnesota has, not a single state. And so to say we are forever frozen in time to hand out this pile of tax subsidies to these particular businesses in these particular ways, and that is more important than increasing per pupil funding on the formula, you know, I guess we'll hear if people make that argument now, but... You know, when I started here, Representative Swigum was, and now Representative Drazkowski has his spot, but he was my speaker for 8 years, and his refrain was always, it's all about choices. It's all about choices. And it is all about choices. And the choice here is continuing to allow tax preferences for legal, they're legal until we change them, they're not doing anything illegal, tax expenditures and preferences that allow a select group of Minnesota companies to park as much of their income earned in overseas structures to avoid paying domestic tax. So, you know, if you doubt that's how it works, study after study is now showing that the growth in revenue, the growth of profits by these companies overseas is astronomical. It's hitting 60%. So just take any of these companies and say 60% of their profits are derived in Luxembourg. I mean, really, I don't think people can make that argument with a straight face. This would be undoing those preferences and instead putting an increase of $168 per pupil on the formula for all Minnesota students.
Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to comment in support of the amendment, and I want to point out, I suspect at least some of us who are in the Tribune service area may have noticed the letter to the editor this morning from the superintendent of the Minnetonka Public Schools, Dennis Peterson. And he pointed out, in fact, I almost had this copied for tonight's meeting, but I didn't. I probably should have. But a key point that he makes is that schools would benefit much more from an increase in the formula with the same number of dollars than they would with the repayment of the shift. Now, he does argue that the shift be repaid, but in terms of the funding that's been available for schools up to this point in recent years, that they would benefit much more right now from that kind of an increase. So the Lincheski amendment would really benefit our schools, as the superintendent in his letter pointed out.
Thank you, Representative Carlson. Any further discussion? Anyone like to testify for or against the amendment? Representative Gottwald? Okay. The committee legislative assistant will take the roll on the A13 amendment to the A12 amendment.
Chair David?
No.
Representative Loon?
No.
Representative Lincheski?
Yes.
Representative Anderson?
No.
Representative Bills?
No.
Representative Biskins? Representative Carlson?
Yes.
Representative Crawford?
No.
Representative Dabney?
Yes.
Representative Depke?
No.
Representative Downey?
No.
Representative Drazkowski?
No.
Representative Erickson?
No.
Representative Garofalo?
No, but I want to thank Representative Carlson because I just made $20.
Representative Gottwald?
No. You'll have to explain that one.
Representative Portman?
Aye.
Representative Kiffmeyer?
No.
Representative Knuth?
Yes.
Representative Coonan?
Yes.
Representative Lesh?
Aye.
Representative Loeffler?
Yes.
Representative Mack?
No.
Representative Marquardt?
Yes.
Representative Myra?
No.
Representative Paymar?
Yes.
Representative Rukavina?
Yep.
Representative Runbeck?
No.
Representative Tilbury?
Yes.
Representative Wardlow?
No.
There being 12 ayes and 17 nays, the motion does not prevail. Representative Marquardt.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I'd like to offer the A18 amendment to the A12 amendment.
Okay, if that could get passed out, please. Mr. Marquardt, can you describe the amendment?
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members. As you know, property taxes went up $370 million for this next payable year. And we know that about 80% of that was directly related to the elimination of the homestead credit. And when you dissect that $370 million of property tax increases, and we're now to the highest level in the 153, almost 154-year history of the state as far as property taxes are concerned, but about 71 million fell on homeowners, 133 million fell on our businesses, another 52 million onto farms. And so what this amendment would do would increase the referendum equalization aid. That would equate to about $118 million of reduced levy or property tax reductions per year. And then it also increases the per pupil funding by $55 per pupil, which is roughly about $55 million a year. So it's paid for with the same mechanism that Representative Dabney and Representative Lincheski's amendments also paid. So it's all paid for responsibly, but what this would do would put more money into the classrooms and also provide some very much needed property tax relief. And members, it's a choice. I think it's a simple choice. It's a choice between voting for your students, voting for your property taxpayers who are senior citizens, business owners, and farmers, or siding with offshore corporations. And so that's the choice, and I would ask that members side with students and property owners and vote yes. And I would like to ask for a roll call, please.
Okay, there will be a roll call. Any discussion? Chair Garofalo?
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I would oppose this amendment. I believe that our strategy of growing revenue and growing jobs is a preferable strategy to confiscating revenue from businesses.
Anyone from the audience who wishes 5-4 or with concerns about the amendment? The committee legislative assistant will take the roll.
Chair Davids?
No.
Representative Loon?
No.
Representative Lincheski?
Yes.
Representative Anderson?
No.
Representative Bills?
No.
Representative Biskins?
No.
Representative Carlson?
Yes.
Representative Crawford?
No.
Representative Dabney?
Yes.
Representative Dutke?
No.
Representative Downey?
No.
Representative Drazkowski? Representative Drazkowski is excused. Representative Erickson?
No.
Representative Garofalo?
No.
Representative Gottwalt?
No.
Representative Hortman?
Aye.
Representative Kiffmeyer?
No.
Representative Knuth?
Yes.
Representative Koonin?
Yes.
Representative Lesh?
Aye.
Representative Loeffler?
Yes.
Representative Mack?
No.
I promise the dirty dozen.
Representative Marquardt?
Yes.
Representative Myra?
No.
Representative Paymar?
Yes.
Representative Rukavina?
Yes.
Representative Runbeck?
No.
Representative Tilbury?
Yes.
No. Representative Wardlow? No. Representative Wardlow is excused.
There being 12 ayes and 15 nays, the amendment is not adopted. Are there any further amendments? Okay, we now have before us the A12 amendment. Any discussion to the A12 amendment? Chair Garofalo?
I'll let the
Representative Carlson.
Well, Mr. Chairman, as I mentioned earlier, this amendment is to make a minor adjustment in current law, is simply changing it from the nearest tenth to the nearest 100th. It had it was a correction that we had to make, or the Department of Finance or OMB had to make as a result of the way the rounding took place. So this is just a minor correction. I would hope that the chair of the K-12 finance would accept it.
Mr. Chairman,
Chair Garofalo?
I thought Representative Carlson was going to withdraw his amendment. Sorry. Just Mr. Chairman, members, I would not feel comfortable accepting the amendment until I had the opportunity to speak with the chair of the Ways and Means Committee. But Representative Carlson, I can assure you that if you withdraw this amendment, we can have a conversation together with her about that.
Representative Carlson?
Well, I'll have an opportunity tomorrow night, I guess. So I'll withdraw the amendment, and we can continue the discussion.
The amendment has been withdrawn. Are there any other amendments? Is there anyone else who would wish to testify regarding this bill, either for the bill or with concerns on the bill? Representative Lincheski.
Mr. Chair, just a question. Can you just tell us the plan here on the week? This bill is going out tonight, and then are we hearing? I mean, I just know when you're done with this bill, everyone's going to walk out the door. So maybe you could tell us.
That would hurt my feelings.
why wait, Representative Lincheski?
You know, I noticed the calendar's changing a lot, and then some days we have votes and some days we don't, and I think it's just helpful, and Representative Garofalo's on the committee too, to just kind of tell us the week ahead here, since I think we're having some evening meetings and maybe going into Friday, and just kind of what's going on. I know Mr. Patrick's doing an incredible job of trying to stick with the ever-changing plan, but if could you tell us a little bit before you adjourn?
Yes, Mr. Patrick does an excellent job at my direction.
yes, he does.
Well, we have tomorrow at 10 o'clock, we will be looking at the omnibus tax bill. We're going to start discussion on that. And then we will continue with that on Wednesday. And then we will continue on Thursday. Mr. Patrick, when do we have votes scheduled? Not until Thursday? Why don't you? So Tuesday during committee, Wednesday during committee.
Just have Bobby read it.
Okay. We'll be looking at amendments on Wednesday and Thursday. There won't be any votes tomorrow on amendments or the bill or anything like that. Then we'll be having the property tax division report coming in on Thursday. And then we'll be taking a discussion and amendments on that. And then be my intention, hopefully we can get it done Thursday, but I don't want to rush anybody. And so we do have the room scheduled from 10 until 3 on Friday, if we need Friday. If we do, that's fine. If not, we'll be done on Thursday. Representative Lincheski.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, I think we asked in property taxes if there would be a division report, and the answer was no. And now you just said we'll be taking the property tax report. So
I misspoke. It'll be individual bills, not a division report. We'll look at each one of them.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Okay, the committee legislative assistant will take the roll on House File 2083. And it's had no amendments, so it's on House File 2083. The Groffel motion is to move House File 2083 to the Ways and Means Committee. The committee legislative assistant will take the roll.
Chair Davids?
Yes.
Representative Loon? Representative Lincheski?
No.
Representative Anderson?
Aye.
Representative Bills?
Aye.
Representative Biskins?
No.
Representative Carlson?
No.
Representative Crawford?
Aye.
Representative Depke?
Aye.
Representative Downey?
Aye.
Representative Drazkowski?
Aye.
Representative Erickson?
Aye.
Representative Garofalo?
Yes.
Representative Gottwalt?
Yes.
Representative Hortman?
No.
Representative Kiffmeyer?
Aye.
Representative Knuth?
No.
Representative Koonin?
No.
Representative Lesh?
No.
Representative Loeffler?
No.
Representative Mack?
Yes.
Representative Marquardt?
No.
Representative Myra?
Yes.
Representative Paymar?
No.
Representative Rukavina?
Well, Mr. Chair, I'm just happy as hell that you Republicans are starting to spend money like this wild-eyed liberal, so I'm going to go with you. Yes.
Representative Runbeck.
Yes.
Representative Tilbury.
No.
Representative Wardlow.
Yes.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Dabney.
Did I do something to offend Ms. Fournier?
I apologize.
Your was Lichtenstein.
She's from
Lichtenstein.
She's from Lichtenstein.
She's from Lichtenstein. Yes.
Mr. Chairman, is this an amendment?
The assistant will call the entire roll.
Representative Dabney.
No. Thank you.
There being 17 ayes and 12 nays, the bill is passed and sent to the Ways and Means Committee. So, members, we have laid out the agenda for the rest of the week. With that, good government all the time, we're adjourned.